Greetings, venturers! It's time for another episode. Before we dive in, I want to let you know that the physical versions of the Venture Maidens campaign guide are actively being shipped out to backers. These beauties are coming out in waves, so folks who ordered the standard hardcover without any other physical add-ons should be receiving their books soon, if they haven't already. Deluxe covers and standard covers with physical add-ons will be up next, followed by collector's boxes. As a reminder, 2C Gaming is the producer on these books, not Venture Maidens, and the keeper of schedules, which means the Kickstarter update page is still the best source of specific updates and the best place to ask questions about fulfillment status. Now, let's say some thank yous. Thank you to Emily Mayo for composing our theme song, to Tabletop Audio for providing ambient music, and to the amazing listeners like you who support us even through this hectic little year we've had. Y'all are the cat's pajamas. I'm going to hit you with that sweet recap, then we'll dive right into episode 34, part 1! Last time on Venture Maidens, our heroes sprang into action fighting off a swarm of carnivorous worms swarming around Professor Mole's house. When it became clear there was no end to the frenzied attacks, Dandelion and his dandy band valiantly stayed behind to cover the party's retreat as the professor urged them into a network of tunnels. The professor explained the worm's strange behavior and the sinkhole was the result of something terrible happening to the typically peaceful mother worm, to whom all worms in the Blossom Court Demesne are connected. At the professor's urging, the gang made their way to the mother worm's cavern, where they found the source of her troubles, an unstable portal that had suddenly appeared in her lair, grievously wounding her. Another wave of pain drove the juvenile worms to attack. But luckily, the missing garlic princess, who had been confined to the lair with the missing Herringon Farmer Patches, was able to stave off the rabid creatures with her natural stench. Everyone raced back to report the news to Duke Walla, who was able to close the portal with his court-granted powers, but not before revealing a disturbing truth. Another fey of equal power to a sovereign was the only one who could have accomplished such a feat. With the portal closed and the worms returned to their natural peaceful state, the party left the wilds behind and returned their new friend Monte to the grateful Herringon elders. And that's what happened. So now, here's the show.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. Now, good friends, bring the clamor for a tale with some glamour. Young Aoife is sitting pretty as she takes on the big city. Bring the sparkle as we head into favor, episode 34, Almost Famous, part 1.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Venture Maidens. Oh, it is so great to have you here. We had a lot of exciting stuff. Last episode, we said goodbye to Jorge, our wonderful first guest of the Favor campaign. And now we've gone from four players down to two because Nassim isn't here today. So we're going to have a nice, cool, chill, probably not episode with these two here. So welcome. Welcome in, everybody. How are you guys feeling? Sage, Katie, ready for a three-person episode?
Oh, man, it's been a while since we had one. I mean, since we had the debut of Lorenzo and his beautiful bride.
Oh,
so,
yes.
You know, I'm ready. We'll be our usual.
These two. Beasley. When you put these two together, trouble happens.
Magic.
So this episode, I've built in a lot of time for trouble in this episode. But speaking of which, hey, everybody, this is the Venture Maidens. If you're not familiar with us, welcome. We are a D&D 5th edition podcast. Venture Maidens is unofficial fan content permitted under the fan content policy, so you're not sponsored or endorsed in any way by Wizards of the Coast. Just want to say that. This is a very adult-themed stream, so you can expect routine, like things like, you know, graphic fantasy violence. We do keep some content warnings up for this episode. We keep a body horror warning up just pretty much for every episode, but there shouldn't be any other specific content warnings for this. But of course, make sure if you are watching this right now in the chat to check those content warnings just in case something came up and has been added to the list. But yeah, I think that's it. So, hey everybody, welcome. My name is Celeste Konowich, and tonight I will be your dungeon master.
Hello, I'm Katie, and I will be playing Luveri Seth, your drow rogue.
And I'm Sage, and I'm your body bard, Aoife Flannery.
Oh, it's going to be a spicy night. I can already tell. We're getting body. Wonderful. Okay, but that is a good place to jump in to the action today. So, like we said, we wrapped up our business basically with what happened at the end of last time. You had been basically pulled into this hole that appeared in the Blossom Court after going and like seeing what had happened with this like mother worm and everything. You had worked with the Duke of the Blossom Court to get that closed. It was all a big success. Monte was great. He was able to go back to live amongst, you know, the Haragons and his family like as a hero. And you all resolved that. And Tandy was super happy with you all for taking on that job. And so I think between the events of that episode and what happens today in this episode, we had a little bit of time, enough, a couple days here for you all to maybe head back to Coven to get situated in that time as well. Rook also had asked Tony to go off with her on a mission that Rook didn't invite either of you to go on and didn't really give any details about, but Tony apparently agreed to whatever it was. So the two of them set off to unknown locations, headed off with strapped with weapons, you know, earlier in the day. But actually that kind of worked out because now, Aoife, we're at the position where your showcase is coming up. So those pieces that you submitted that were accepted by the Chaosiana Fashion Institute, they were selected to be in the big, like, end of year kind of student showcase that they have in Phelan, the capital city, the fashion capital of the empire every year. So you all have that. And as part of that, because your selections were chosen, the Eldrin Empire is covering the cost of your room to go and stay for the event. They're giving you a sweet stipend. And of course, at the end, like, you know, our Saturday night equivalent, you will see two of your pieces, your outfits, in this fashion show. What is the preparations for this? Like, what's going on before we even get to the city? Is there anything that you want to make sure to bring or, you know?
Yeah, so I think that one of the things that kind of ties into Lou's new heroic destiny tier.
Right. We need to talk about that before we actually begin the action. Okay, yes. Thank you for reminding me. So yeah, so as part of the end of that last episode, you had gotten a very special garlic cutting, basically, from the Blossom Court, from, you know, her royal stinkiness herself. So that satisfied the requirement to get to your next tier two milestone. So here you are. So yeah, tell us, Lou, what's up? What do you get now that you're even more virtuoso?
So it's called patronage, but I'm calling it money, honey.
Money babies. Yes.
So essentially what this means for somebody with this heroic destiny is that you've gotten good enough at what you're trying to be a virtuoso in that you've started to attract a lot of attention, even to the point where you have patrons. And they are people who have the money and any resources that they need and basically just are there for you to try to help you become better and pursue your craft because they believe in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Basically like investors, you know, people who just believe in you so much and are going to be there and love what you're doing.
Yeah. So mechanically what this means is that at the start of each week, you get 15 gold pieces per patron or materials of that value. And you can continue to get that, you know, at your DM gets to decide though, if you haven't been visiting them enough to give them like the goods that mm-hmm. they're supporting you for, then that can potentially get cut off until you go back there and you, you know, meet with them again to give them the benefit of their patronage.
Yeah. So I assumed for this, it would be like Coven was going to be your base kind of operations, because that's where your food cart is and, you know, where everything starts there. So basically every 30 days or so, you have to be in Coven and you have to be serving some food to keep these people happy. Yeah. As you know, as we get more power, we get more responsibility. So
I'm now Spider-Man.
Such is the way. Such is the way. So yeah, you even picked who you want to be your first like patron, right?
Yeah, so I picked actually Tortimore, who was like this turtle man who had actually given Aoife information after she helped him out for a while to help us find Penny. So I figured this was set up through Lou worrying, as she always does, that like, oh, hey, this person was aware that we were going to do something completely dangerous. Mm-hmm. I should let them know we're not dead.
Very
and
nice.
And say thank you for their help. So she just made like some old people chow. So she made mashed potatoes, something easy to chew, with like some other side things, just in case he was being like, what are you saying?
Yeah, excuse me. Some leafy greens, obviously. Turtle, love that shit, you know?
Absolutely.
Nice dandelion salad.
Roasted carrots,
you know, all the good stuff. Strawberries, I love that shit. I guess maybe I'm thinking tortoise. He's a tortoise man, let's just say, because I had pet tortoises. I have no idea what actual water turtles eat.
Listen, I don't know either of their diets, but I know that mashed potatoes are delicious, yeah. And I have garlic now, so why not try out using that? Because who doesn't love a mashed potato with some also addition of confit garlic? Ugh,
so good.
Like,
so good.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So she would have gone by and delivered that with the knowledge that we are still living. And instead of the 15 gold pieces, though, she was going to ask for a book for, you know, some lady who I've heard likes to read.
And lives in Phelan and like might be someone you want to visit. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
What kind of book do you get? Gift test.
I know that she's really interested in the Feywild, so I think that she probably would get something kind of between their two interests. So I think she would get something on changelings, because that's been something that since she found out their situation, she's really interested in trying to help them. And, you know, something to talk about.
Yeah. Okay. A book about changelings. Yeah, totally. And Tortimer absolutely can get you something exciting, almost like a case study on changelings. So people, arcane researchers who have been like, what exactly is this? And how does this work? So it's got a lot of interesting information in it, too, about like the nature, the ambient magic of the fae, you know, of the wilds and how that affects people. And so, yeah, can absolutely get that. And I think, you know, you probably set up like a standing delivery order with Steven, his little kobold servant, if you remember.
Steven! How could I forget Steven?
So Steven will routinely now be running, you know, between the witch's brew and him delivering these like meals on wheels for Tortimore. Sweet, yeah. So you probably in Coven for like a couple days, so you can absolutely get all of that done and squared away in that time. Is there anything, Aoife, that you were doing or want to make sure you do before you head off?
Aoife is definitely running around like mad. She spends every waking and sleeping hour in the Mistress Silk's dress shop trying to just finish up those last details and pin those last things in place and doing fittings and everything and grabbing some, you know, like extra fabric, extra buttons and everything, because just God knows if something falls off.
Because also, I don't think, has Aoife actually been part of a fashion show before, or is that this is like new?
No, so this is all new experience for her. This is like the first time she's like really showing off, you know, her skills or something to, you know, other than her siblings and her grandparents in their living room when, you know, when she made like her first dress or whatever. So her first time making like a real public debut. Yeah. So she is just frantic. She hasn't slept. She's just been pounding coffee.
Yeah. And Kel has absolutely been in the background this whole time, like, getting you things. Oh, there's a refill of coffee. Oh, like, he's put a sandwich in front of your face. So definitely, like, while you're so on the drive, there are these people around you supporting you in the background. And of course, Mistress Silk never 100% appears delighted, right? She just, that's just not really her vibe, but she does seem very pleased that this is all happening and kind of intentionally almost leaves you to do your thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's testing you, but, and you know, making comments like, oh, well, you know, once you do this in the mortal realm, you might even be ready for a Wilds show. We'll see how it goes. That sort of like.
Yeah, I just imagine. Oh my God, my brain just completely fell apart. Not Marilyn, Meryl Streep.
Yes.
With that Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, she totally is.
Oh my God, yes.
She is Meryl Streep, Mistress Silk. Oh man.
Just that slightest curl of the lips to show approval, and you're like, this is what I live for.
Oh my God. It's everything I've ever wanted. It's so validating.
She's one day she just stops throwing the hem jobs on your desk on top of what you're working on. You know.
You know? Yeah. Happy. Oh, you're not doing little repairs anymore. No, no. You have an intern who follows you around. We'll see if this goes well, perhaps. A lot is riding on this. But yeah, so like I did mention, so as part of this whole package deal, basically you know that you are one of only four students that have been chosen. And your case is even more unique because the other three are actual full-time students enrolled. You're kind of like a guest in this whole process. So that's pretty spectacular that you've been chosen. And like I said, it's a 2-day all expenses covered trip to Feylin. So they actually have like a little studio loft hotel thing that you will get to stay at. You're welcome to bring a friend with you, just one, because you're sharing the room. So you bring Lou, and yeah, so basically all you need to do is get there, and apparently everything will be waiting for you.
Beautiful. Yeah. Aoife furiously packing all of her bags, even though she doesn't really have to, because I assume we can take the chicken house, but she just has to feel ready.
Well, and then also, too, because you probably can't bring the house into the city, and Feylin is just this sprawling, gigantic city. So if you had to, like, run last minute to get anything out of the chicken hut, like, no way. No way. All right. Well, we're ready to head to the big city.
To the mortal realm.
Away! Yes. So you take the hut, which luckily also Rook and Tony just didn't seem to take with them. So maybe wherever they're going is close.
What are they up to?
Who knows? Those two, who knows?
They're either going to come back in body bags or married. I don't know.
Maybe both.
Nobody knows. They're going to Faye Vegas. Yeah,
Vegas.
God, that would be a nightmare. We've got to go there. But anyway, so you take the hut, and in a matter of hours, you arrive outside of Feylin. I think we've touched on this before, but Lou, have you been to Feylin? I don't think you've actually been there, right? Or
so Aoife, because she basically more or less walked from the Valley of Yelanthanol down the continent to the Feywalk jungle. She would have only been there for like a day or two just to pass through. So not a huge day. You know, it's like that 24 hours in New York sort of feeling.
Lou has been there a few times to do like a few dealings for the family. And then just like every now and then she'll like take an extra day while she's there just to like try the foods that they have that she can't find back home. But she's not like, doesn't know where she's going by any means or anything like that.
When you exit, you know, the hut and make your way onto like the main roads that lead into Feylin, you are greeted, of course, by, I guess, a familiar sight, but it's still so majestic as you walk up towards this city, which looks so different than anywhere else in the rest of the empire. You see all of these like high-rise spires made of just gorgeous like colored metals and glass just that seem to expand outwards forever. And Feylin is located on the coast as well. So you have, of course, the beautiful just like crystal blue ocean views that entirely, you know, form the backdrop of the city, right? You see the spires and just beyond it, just rolling blue. It's quite an impressive sight as you walk up. And already, I mean, the roads are instantly, they're just full of people, carts going in and out. There's like the Eldrin Empire maintains a pretty efficient like carriage service that goes across the land. So like cab equivalent, just like rushing in and out of the city, traffic, merchants. You can see ships that are coming in and out, docking at the gigantic ports of this place. And as you mash in immediately with all the different people, and just you see every culture and just smells and sounds, and just it's so much, it's so big city immediately, like as you step into Phelan. And of course, crowning it all, from wherever you are, you can see at the very center of the city is the Rainbow Palace, which is these gigantic, again, glass spires of every different color topped with these like shining orbs of light that sits at the highest point in the center of the city, even higher than all the other tall buildings. So you can always see that glittering gem of the city from wherever you are. How are you doing? Are you excited? What are you wearing? You're in the big city. Tell me all about it.
Oh my goodness. Aoife, much like when we were in Chasayana, Aoife, her eyes are just as big as dinner plates, trying to take in every single sight and sound and person and look and see, you know, what is it, you know, what does everything generally look like? You know, like what kind of clothes are people wearing? You know, what does the architecture look like and everything? And just, you know, trying to furiously like sketch little sketches in her book while we're in like on a bumpy road in the car.
Yeah, right. Over, of course. Yeah, potholes and whatever. Like, because the streets are all really narrow. It is unlike Chasayana, which is a very open air kind of sprawling feel to it. This city is a lot more metropolitan. It feels tight. Like all of the buildings are stacked on top of each other and like really close. There really aren't any like natural spaces except for like the natural parks, you know, those squares that have been reserved for it. So it's absolutely very overwhelming and fast, as fast is the big feeling you're getting as you are looking around and you're seeing, you know, street folk sitting on corners, like asking for change next to people in like gorgeous couture, like full outfits, striding down the street from boutique to boutique. It's just a mishmash of different people. And I will say too, the vibe also in general is a lot more like science fantasy, I think, than anywhere else in this. So there are a lot of strange things like those boxy buildings that look a lot like modern skyscrapers and stuff. That's just things that you would not see anywhere else in like a fantasy setting. What are you doing, Lou? How are you handling all this?
Lou is fine. She's kind of just been like support Aoife in this trying time. So she has got the bag of holding like at the ready, so that every time that Aoife is just like, oh shit, I forgot. I'm like, no, you didn't. It's right here. Calm down.
No, it's good. I've got your extra needles. It's fine.
And I think that before we left the chicken hut, she used the mailbox to just like send a quick telegram to let Cassie know, since this is Cassie's town too. Hey, I'm in town. I'd love to see you at some point. I've got your address, so I may stop in.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So she's got like also with her like a basket of like snacks and stuff to bring to Cassie as well at some point while they're there.
Very sweet.
But she's just kind of like, I don't know. I think she just finds joy in watching Aoife get so excited about the city, because she like really believes that like this is where she's gonna be. Like, so she's just like taking in Aoife more than the city having been here already, and just having a good time.
Yeah, very cool. It seems like no time at all before you reach this district where you are going to be staying, which is one of the districts that is closest to the center, so closest to the Rainbow Palace. And basically, the closer you get towards the center, the more high-end, let's say, these districts get. So where you're going to be staying is a very popular place for tourists, in terms of, like, this is where a lot of museums are and theaters. A lot of, like, strong nightlife happens around here. So you can see already when you step outside, like, glittering, arcane, you know, signage all around here of these different places and strange and beautiful buildings. That's like, ooh, the Museum of Modern Art. And the people that are on the street, again, they all look so fancy and are moving so quickly with briefcases and whatever important business they're attending to. You arrive at your hotel. It's probably like 5 p.m., 6 p.m.-ish. So the sun is like just starting to set, which is casting, of course, just gorgeous lights off of all of these tall, glittering, you know, metallic buildings. So just ambient rainbows kind of drift in the sky as you are looking up at this very high-rise building in front of you. That's just like a sleek, almost mirror-reflective casing all around it. And it's one of those fancy places with, you know, people in attendance uniforms that are like taking bags and putting them on carts and, you know, saying madam and all very fancy.
Aoife, you're a madam now. How does it feel?
She's doing her best to look like she fits in. So her chin is up a little bit more, trying to, you know, stands up a little bit straighter, tries to pretend like she knows where she's going, and frequently, like, stops and looks around, and then is like, ah, yes, I'm going this way, and flicks her hair back.
And an Eldrin in one of these uniforms walks up to you and, may I help you with your bags?
Oh, that would be quite lovely, please. We're staying in, you know, in whatever room, as a courtesy of the Phelan Institute of Fashion.
Ah, please, if you will go up to the front desk, they will help you with your room keys, and I will take your luggage up myself. And you, madam? Looks at you, Lou.
Oh, no, I'm fine. I've got it. I'm sturdy. Thank you, though.
He, like, looks at you and then kind of looks at the half-empty luggage cart and is like, it's really no trouble.
I'd really feel better if I held on to these garlic knots myself. Thank you.
As you wish, he says, and kind of purses his lips and walks away from you, pulling all of Aoife's stuff behind him. And you can step into the main, like, lobby area, which is just this gorgeous room with tall, tall ceilings and lots of, like, couches for lounging all around. They've got three fountains inside that seem to all be flowing with different, like, rainbow-colored water and just these, like, gorgeous stained glass window panels casting all this awesome light into the room. A lot of very fashionable people are sitting around talking with one another, seeming to either wait for rooms or hang out around this, like, little lobby bar area that seems to be off to the side here. And there's a large golden and brass counter at the front that is clearly the reception desk.
Aoife will stride up very boldly and sure of herself. Ding the bell.
Yeah, and a human woman comes over towards you. Oh, yes, how can I help you?
The name is Aoife Flannery. We're here courtesy of the Phelan Institute of Fashion. I'm debuting my pieces this week in a showcase. She's just like, she just bubbles with just like pride in everything. Just every time she says it, it just never gets old.
Lou has been like rolling her eyes for the past six times it's been said, but every time that Aoife turns and looks at her, she's like,
yeah.
Sweet.
So great. And the woman is like, oh, fantastic. It is always such a pleasure to see our students succeeding. Yes, here we go. I have this packet for you. This will contain all of the information, your agenda and such. I have been told to let you know that there is a soiree happening this evening for the students in the lobby lounge. She indicates with a hand towards the little bar area off to the side. And of course, yes, your complimentary snacks. And she holds out like a basket that has like a champagne bottle and like some hell strawberries, yeah, and like just a little something we like to provide for our special guests. And will you be needing two room keys?
Oh, yes, please.
Of course. So go up here on the 17th floor. Your room will be at number 6.
Yeah, taking the basket and the room keys, and she's just turns around and she's just beaming at Lou. She can't even hold it in.
Is there anything else I can help you with today?
No.
No, thank you. And Lou just kind of like stands there for a second and then like slides a gold piece across to her and like looks at Aoife and she's like, I feel like I have to pay everybody for speaking to me in here.
And the human like slaps her hand just a little too quickly over the gold piece and like with a smile like brings it down behind her. I hope you have a wonderful stay. And you can see that there are like little magic boxes off to the side. It is so weird. You can see them in this like big glass tower off to the side here. And all of a sudden, like this large, almost like double coffin size thing. I don't know if you've ever seen elevators before. This is wacky.
Oh, never.
You see it, and it goes, and it just like shoots up really fast. And people keep getting in them, and they seem fine, but boy, does that look weird. You can also see there are stairs behind that.
Aoife's like, all right, Lou, I'm a little bit afraid of heights, but I really don't want to walk up 17 flights of stairs, so I'm going to be brave.
Okay, we'll hold each other. I don't even mind heights, but that's a lot of stuff happening there.
Yeah, so you see there are people standing there, and they seem to press like a little panel that lights up on the wall and are just waiting for one of these doors to open again.
We'll just get on with them so that they can do everything and we don't look like idiots.
Oh, good idea. And wait, here, hold this so both of our arms can be full, and then they can press all the buttons on the inside so we don't have to.
I knew I held on to this basket for a reason.
Yes. Okay. Now you feel good. You have two snack baskets. This is a good day. So yeah, you wait, and like there's a little bing sound, and you see like a whoo as one of these magic boxes just like comes right back down the tube, and the doors open, and yeah, this person in front of you, this Eldrin man in a nice suit, steps on board, and you can like shuffle in really quick behind. He confidently presses a button on the inside, and you see a little flashing number lights up, and you're all like standing in a small box together.
17, please.
Oh, yep. And pushes one. Beep. All of a sudden, it's like, you feel, yeah, the pit of your stomach a little, as, like, you just shoots up, and you can see outside the glass tube, right? So you can see, like, ooh, the lobby's getting very, very small as you go up, and suddenly, you know, once you pass past the ceiling, you can't see it anymore. And then, like, in just a matter of seconds, bing, and it opens up, and the man is just, like, waiting for you to
awkwardly shuffle out, like stumble out of the box.
Yeah. Lou shuffles out and then reaches her arm in and hands him a gold piece. Scrambles out into the floor.
Okay, are you sure? And then bing, and the doors close, and he goes off.
I think we're gonna be broke by the end of this weekend.
No, we just got so much money. We're doing fine.
We're doing fine. Oh yeah, because Tandy paid y'all a lot of money.
Yeah, we have over 6,000 gold right now. Well,
from the bounty for the mayor job, we earned 5,000 gold pieces.
Mm-hmm,
so.
Yeah, tip everyone. You know what? That is just a good strategy when you have social anxiety. Just tip everyone, and it just, there you go.
If you're being paid to be here, I don't have to feel bad about making you listen to my awkward conversation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. So you step out, like, luckily the floor is, like, normal and not moving, as you get into this long, thin hallway, and you can see, of course, all these different doors on either side, and you can no problem find the one labeled 6. It seems to be one of these big corner suites, and as you, you know, turn your key and open up the door, you see just this gorgeous, like, expansive studio-style room with just an entire wall of windows that looks down over all the glittering gems of the city. There's lots of, like, cozy, modern, you know, leather furniture all over the place. There's a small, like, kitchenette area. And you can see, you know, just a gorgeous, like, giant bed in one corner and a bathroom that has just a glorious marble tub. Pretty swanky. And your bags are waiting there by the bed.
Amazing. Aoife, yeah, immediately runs and then jumps and flops onto the bed with a couple bounces.
Lou will go over with the champagne bottle and pop it open and pour two glasses and bring one over to Aoife. Cheers! We're here! You did it! You're incredible!
Oh, she just lets up this big, heavy, like, sigh of excitement of just like, all right, I've made it. I can finally relax a tiny bit.
I was thinking, Aoife, I've been noticing the past few days that you have been working really hard on these same pieces, and you're having trouble stopping. So, to relax a little bit before you go to this party and woo everybody with your fantastic shining personality, great looks, and wit, maybe you could help me before I go see Cassie with, I don't know, just kind of like judging my look. So it's just something fun, like don't stress out about it. I feel like for a long time, I haven't really cared that much about what I'm wearing. But now that I realize that people can still be attracted to me, I should probably try.
As soon as Lou starts talking and Aoife realizes, like, what she's getting at asking, you see this just, like, little smile just grow, like, centimeter by centimeter across her face as she gets more and more excited, but she's trying to keep it in, and she starts slowly moving towards her pile of bags and opening them without breaking eye contact with Lou, and is, like, already pulling out fabrics and makeup and everything. Oh, Lou, I have been waiting for this moment for so long.
Oh, okay, because I didn't want to, like, burden you with this, but I'm really excited because I really like the things that you make, and I just thought on top of everything, it would be really, really cool and an honor to wear something that you made to your show. So, like, if you're excited, then I cannot even express. I actually... Okay, it was kind of hard getting around all this when I was looking for stuff in the carriage. But I brought all of these pink aprons that my family has given me for my birthdays over the past 20 years when someone figured out I liked them. And I thought maybe we can make them into something I will use.
And she has that polite, confused look on her face, like, I don't want to show discouragement, and I want to try and keep building on this, and we'll take them, and she'll study them for a moment, and she'll, you know, she'll start pulling them out and looking at them, judging the size and everything, and you see she kind of, like, folds them down on her lap, and she just stares off into the corner, into the distance, for a very long, awkward time, and then she'll suddenly look at you, and she'll be like, I've got it.
Lou, at that point, I just, like, moved on to, like, pouring another glass of champagne and almost, like, spills it everywhere. What were you thinking? Were you, like, sexy? Maybe not that. What? You tell me.
I'm imagining, like, puffball pink. Is that, like, pink bathrobe pink? That's what I'm imagining. Is that what we've got here? Or, like, what kind of pink? Varying shades of pink?
Every kind of shade, fabric, pattern, one that's, like, Frida got her that, like, very clearly was, like, an apron for sexy time, but she didn't understand that. And yeah, was like, look at all the lace. Like,
look how cute. Yeah.
My goodness.
Everything you can imagine, and I'm pulling this from my own reality because that literally happened to me.
I know. But- I was like, I'm pretty sure I've heard this story.
So just everything you have that in pink to white is there.
Oh, fantastic. And Aoife will say, well, sexy will be difficult with this material, but what I think we could do is something very romantic.
What are you trying to say?
My heavy canvas isn't...
This gingham doesn't
scream sex pot. Yeah, I don't know.
I think that sounds great. I'm a little bit of a romantic. So.
And then Aoife, she'll take out her sketchbook and flip to a fresh page and pull out a couple of pink colored pencils, and she'll, you know, take about 20 minutes to sketch something out for Lou. Something that's, you know, it has sort of like flowy sleeves, kind of like a V-neck shape, you know, sort of a little bit loose in the hips, so that she can feel free, like she can still move around and everything and have some mobility, but something that like flows nicely with her shape. And I turn around and flip it towards Lou for her approval.
Lou like takes a look at it and she just like takes one hand and just like covers her mouth for a moment. I love it. And I have the perfect boots, actually. I brought every pair of shoes I own. And she...
Neva just, like, claps really, like, excitedly, and she immediately starts diving into her, trying to find her sewing kit and everything, and it's like, all right, it shouldn't take me too long. You won't want to run around too much in it, because, you know, it'll be pretty loose stitches, but I'll be able to, you know, pull it together for you, and then I'll be able to really properly sew it once we get back to the chicken hut, but it'll be a little fragile. So don't do anything crazy.
That could be sexy.
She just, like, makes a face like she's, like, wants to make a dirty joke, and then she's like, no, you know what? Tell me what you need. I will just... Here, I'll keep topping you off as necessary, but not too much, because you have people to impress later.
She'll start taking your measurements and everything, and cut, you know, pulls out her big shears and starts cutting, and fast at work.
Yeah, so in terms of, you can also, while you're getting settled and, you know, digging in, you can open up that little folder, you know, and see your agenda and pack it. So it looks like in terms of commitments, this evening, like 8, 9, kind of after dinner, you have that little, like, soiree thing where it's like a meet and greet where you get to meet the other students, you'll get to meet some of the models that you'll be working with, and the dean of the school is going to be there as well. So that's this evening, and then the rest of the time is open. Tomorrow, you have, like, earlier in the day, you get to go and bring your garments and, like, set up your stations and tour the theater and stuff, and that's around, like, lunchtime. And then you're free basically the rest of the day until the show, which is going to be, like, 7 p.m., 8 p.m. in the evening back at the theater. So you'll have quite a bit of time. So all of this evening, you've got a few hours, and then whatever you want to do in the city tomorrow. So pretty free for him. A lot of time to do whatever you want while you're here. So Lou, you want to go see Cassie tonight?
Yeah, I figure I can go see her while Aoife is at the party. She doesn't need a chaperone.
It's only in the lobby.
Listen, I mean, as fun as it would be, yeah, to listen to people talk about ruffles or whatever.
You know what? You have so much fun. I am uninterested in anything except your happiness. Bye.
Reasonable. Reasonable. I like the honesty.
That's okay. You know, sometimes you gotta get the bird out of the nest. Let him fly. You know, let him do it for themselves. Okay, so then Cassie would have been able to follow up. I'm assuming you gave her, like, the address of where you're staying.
Yeah. She kind of wants to go, like, to her place. And, like, because that tells you a lot about a person. So she's ready to investigate.
Yeah, so probably there's going to be a message waiting for you, I think, at the front desk at some point. A courier, you know, will come up and deliver, you know, oh, Cassie's like, oh, cool, like, stoked you're here. Yeah, what do you want to do? Like, come over or Twin give you an address. And you can see that her address is actually part of Phelan University. She seems to have a on-campus apartment, which makes sense. A lot of researchers or students or teachers actually stay at the campus. So she might be any of those or any combination of those.
Yeah, I mean, she'll plan to probably just wait until Aoife is ready to go and then give her a little, like, cheer and then head off to go meet up.
You're gonna have to answer this question a lot, Sage, but what is Aoife wearing to this meet and greet?
Ooh.
I'm going to be asking you, what are you wearing? This is the fashion episode.
Yes. So she is wearing, because it's like an evening soiree, so she is wearing, I think she's wearing like a really kind of slinky black lace dress that has at the end of it like this layer, like layers of tulle to like sort of like puff out the skirt a bit, and wearing lots of gold looking jewelry and rings and everything, so just like over the top with the accessories, and she has like little glitter that she puts on her horns.
So you look great, good job, 10 out of 10. And Lou, you've got your dreamy flowy pink dress. What's the hair and makeup situation that we're doing for the state?
I think that she managed to fend off, like, Aoife, because she's very stuck in her ways, just, like, her traditional cat eye sort of thing. But I think one thing that she does differently is normally she has, like, her hair very tightly pulled up in a bun with her bandana in it. And she kind of, like, she's wearing the outfit, but she fucking refuses to take off her armor because mama didn't raise no fool. So, yeah. Like,
you're in the big city. You could get stabbed.
from, like, the collar, you can still see, like, the black leather armor coming up. So she'll take her bandana down and just kind of, like, tie it like a cute little ascot around her neck to cover that. And then just kind of push her hair to the side and, like, let her waves kind of fall down, feeling the romantic vibes.
All right, cool. Well, anything else we want to do before we, like, part ways? Any other conversations or before we play out these scenes?
No, she's just like, fucking knock him dead. You don't need help. You got this. Yeah, you're incredible.
Basically like, right back at you.
Oh my god, I don't know what you're doing. Shut up.
All right. Sweet. What do we want to do first, gang? Do we want to go have a date? Do we want to go have a meet and greet?
I hear the meet and greet. I want to see Aoife slay.
Yes. Yes. Let's do it.
Yeah, so the appointed hour comes down and you can make your way down to the lobby, navigating once again the strange floating boxes that seem to navigate this entire hotel. And when you get down to the main lobby area, the lobby is even more fantastic at night, just because now, you know, there isn't the ambient light coming in to rely on the windows and effects. So all of these like glowing, almost like oil lamp style lights have been lit throughout, which casts everything in a very like, yeah, romantic kind of loungy vibe. You can also hear live music is coming now from the bar area. They actually have like a little small stage set up. So somebody, you know, crooning in along to a piano, giving it a very jazzy vibe. There are all manner of people hanging out in this lounge area. You can see most of them look like working professionals, kind of kicking back at the end of the day. But there is very clearly a group of tables that are just fashion people are around there. You can see from just the colors and the big hair and the very couture style outfits, the things that no normal person would ever wear and be comfortable. They're all lounging about, talking, chatting with one another. So that looks like your place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Aoife, she takes a minute to just, like, fix her hair out of her eyes and, like, make sure her, you know, dress is on straight and takes a quick little breath and walks up.
As you do, and to get closer to the table, you know, heads turn in your direction, and a very small Eldrin man with, like, a powder blue sort of, like, big hair updo thing and a sleek, like, silk number that perfectly matches his hair stands up and goes, "Oh my goodness. Are you Aoife Flannery? You must be. Yes?"
And she tries to hold back the "someone knows my name" smile. And she very demurely holds out a hand and says, "It's me. I'm very excited to meet you all."
Oh, it is so wonderful to finally meet you. We have heard just amazing things. My name is Auguste Abagner. I am the Dean of Fashion for the Chaussiana Institute. It is absolutely a pleasure to meet you. It is always so exciting when we find raw talent out there in the wild. Why have you not enrolled yet? He comes up and like grabs your hand.
And, you know, she giggles furiously and she says, "Well, after this, I think I'll have to. But I've been busy out with the life of adventure, so excited to meet other students here and maybe see if this city's the right fit for me."
Oh, well, fantastic. Well, don't let Phelan steal you. We would love to have you in Chaussiana. We're just here for the big showcase, after all. But anyway, yes, let's meet your fellow accolades. Students, he turns, and you notice now three people that were sitting at the table with him, and they all kind of stand up. So you see a halfling woman stands up, and you can already tell she's just quirky. The minute you look at her, imagine like 70s all over the place, like neon, you know, glow, like greens and polka dots and strange makeup, but it all kind of works for her in some like quirky way. She sticks out a hand and says, Mary Lane, so nice to meet you.
And Aoife will take it and shake it.
And then there is another person. You see an Eldrin stands up, non-binary in dress and appearance. And they have like a whole goth thing going on, totally dressed in black, black lipstick, absolutely fabulous, like pale death vibes, but just so fabulous. And holds out a hand, Corey with an eye.
And Aoife's like takes the whole look in and is just like, I absolutely love all that. You'll have to tell me where you get all this lace. It's hard to find such fine quality.
And they sort of flick, you know, a bang back and look at you without saying anything as a response. And then the third person stands up, another Eldrin woman, and she kind of stands up, and as she does so, she like spills her drink, and she's like, okay, sorry, she's got kind of like a frumpy dress that doesn't quite fit right on her, as mm-hmm. Genevieve Keswick, nice to meet you.
Oh, lovely to meet you all.
Yes, like I said, these are our students, so these are my Fab Four, Agu says, and looks at you all. Drinks, anyone? Now, we can't get too crazy, but, you know, we're gonna have some fun! What do you want? He says and points at you, Aoife.
Oh my goodness. And she just looks like, panics for a second, that like, what do I drink that's cool? I don't know, and she just thinks about like the first drink that she had in the witch's brew, and she says, honey mead.
Oh, fun. Cute. I'll be right back. Just another round. And he like walks off and he's like, oh my god, Marigold. And like is talking to somebody like in passing as he makes his way towards the bar. You know, you sit down and these three are all kind of looking at you and looking at each other. And then Mary turns and says, so we hear you're like an adventurer? How's that?
And Aoife says, I left my home up in the Valley of Ilanthanol, and I made my way south towards the Feywalk jungle, and I worked with the army, you know, just doing repairs on uniforms and equipment and everything, but I've been down into the wilds and have been back and went to Chasiana. And so it's just been kind of a whirlwind few months of being able to see so much of the plains that I've never seen before. You know, I'd never left home before a few months ago.
Oh my god, that is so interesting. Wow, you've like traveled everywhere. Is that like your thing? I'm just gonna say it, like, we haven't seen your designs, and of course, you know, it's always sort of a thing, like somebody getting in and they, you know, didn't go to the school, and so you must be really special.
Oh man, and Aoife's already having like flashbacks to her frenemy apocrypha at Mistress Silk's, like, mm-hmm. oh, this is how we are. I see. Okay. Oh. Feeling the sting of that barb, she says, ah, well, you know, it's an honor to get in on my own merits, and I'm very excited to show off my designs tomorrow.
And then, yeah, Corey with an eye will chime in and be like, Mary's actually harmless. It's really not such a big deal. There's usually one outside the school who's chosen, and then the three traditional, so don't let her give you a hard time. And she kind of, like, does a sassy face at Mary, who, like, does a sassy face back and is like, and then, like, throws back the rest of her drink. While Genevieve this whole time has been just clearly trying to be as small as humanly possible in her chair.
Oh, that's a mood. And, yeah, so Aoife will be like, so, are you all from here? Are you all planning on doing anything fun in the city tomorrow? I've never really been to Faelyn, so I don't know what's really to do or see, but everything is just so tall.
Yeah, and Mary will say, yeah, I mean, you're talking to me. She, like, points at her halfling, like, she's, like, 3 feet tall, maybe. There's, like, so much stuff to do, honestly, but I'm here all the time, like, my family, you know, trades. I live in Chasiana, of course, you know, all the halfling families down there and stuff, so I'm not really gonna do anything. I might just, like, kick it. It's so nice not having my parents here for once. I have, like, a super big family, and they're, like, always in my business, so I think I'm just gonna, like, hang out tomorrow. I don't know, what do you want to do, Corey? And Corey just waits for Mary to be done and is like, I don't know, I guess if there's something cool, I'll go.
And then, like, Aoife not knowing what to do with that dynamic, and it's like, are they friends? Do they hate each other? I can't tell what's going on. We'll yes. Turn to the other one. Oh, it's very complex. Turn to Genevieve and be like, so what do you like to do? And, like, try to, like, steer the conversation and pull her into it.
Yeah, and she kind of squeaks as you, like, look at her, and she goes, I You know what? I actually don't feel so good, so I think I'm just going to go up to my room. Can you just let the dean know? Okay. Bye. And she stands up and starts, like, shuffling out of the bar.
Yeah, and Aoife will kind of scurry after her and be like, are you all right? I know some healing magic. I can make a poultice for you, or is it nerves? Mm-mm. It's okay to be nervous.
No, I'm fine. No, I just have a headache. Okay. Bye. And she's just like gunning it off, like towards the elevators. And Mary go, you know what? It's really not worth it. She's just sort of like that. Don't take it personally.
Oh, all right. I mean, she kind of furrows her brow a little bit and goes to sit back down at the table, and we'll just quickly drink her drink. Feeling like a little fish in a big pond.
Yeah, and Mary will be like, honestly, I'm not even sure why she's here. It seems like she doesn't want to be here, and frankly, her stuff has, like, never been that good until, like, just recently. We honestly all thought she was going to flunk out of school, and here she is, so whatever. I would just recommend staying away from her. She's just a little weird. And Corey's like, totally.
Interesting, then. Well, I'm excited to see what everyone brings tomorrow. I'm so excited to see, like, have you all seen the workspaces? Are those the workspaces you work in usually? The state-of-the-art facilities.
The Royal Theater is pretty nice. I've been there before to see some shows, but I've never actually showcased a piece there. But it should be pretty cool. What did you bring? Are you doing, what, evening? Gown? Suit?
As soon as Corey says evening gown, Aoife looks a little bit deflated, because she's like, oh no, is that unoriginal? Should I not have done that?
And there is nothing in her voice that indicates whether that is true or not. It all seems judgmental, whatever you say.
She's like, yeah, you know, she's twisting her hands kind of like uncomfortably under the table. And she's like, you know, I just always fell in love with, you know, the ball gowns that this arena or other nobles would wear to big galas. And I always wanted to design big pieces like that. So I made some evening gowns, but with some unconventional materials.
And Mary goes, oh my God, and like grabs her wrist. Did you hear that the Tsarina is going to be there tomorrow night?
And Aoife just like immediately like tenses her whole body. And it's like,
yeah, like what? Apparently she's in town and she doesn't really go to these things a lot, but like because she's here and, you know, it's the student showcase. Yeah, word is she's going to actually be there. Talk about pressure, right?
Her mouth is just agape, and she's like, it's always been my dream to design a dress for her. Oh my God, she's going to see my dresses, and she's probably going to hate that. And she's just like kind of starting to spiral a little bit.
Yeah. Mary's like, oh my God, you're so cute. This is so cute. Oh my God, Corey, look. Like,
look at the sad little freshman.
Oh my God. What a baby. So cute. Yeah. So eventually dean does come back and, you know, he's like, oh, what happened to Genevieve? Did she go? Yeah, she wasn't feeling well or whatever. That's a shame. Well, here's your honey mead. Apparently they didn't even have anything like that. They had to like get a special order. So look at how already so interesting. She slides it over to you.
Oh my God. Aoife is feeling like she's just under a microscope and is so uncomfortable, but is trying so hard to play it cool.
Yeah. Welcome to the celebrity heroic destiny. Yes. The other two do seem to get a little, like, friendlier, I guess. It's not that they weren't friendly before, but, like, August being there seems to, like, chill them out a way that, like, the evening can kind of roll on. You can actually, you know, ask questions about what you've brought and, like, ask the other two. So it's a more, like, constructive, I feel like, conversation than just the, like, the sheer mean girl terror.
Mm-hmm. The claws retract a little bit.
Yeah. Claws. Okay. Like, teachers here. All right. Yeah. And of course, as people, like, kind of chill out and, you know, drink a little bit more, like, they get friendlier. It does become very clear that Mary and Corey are actually, like, really tight. Mostly friends. Just a little enemy in there. But, you know, they seem to know each other super well. And then the sentiment, again, about Genevieve, nobody really knows much about her. She's just never really been involved in, like, school culture or not much to say about her.
After the evening goes on and everything starts winding down, Aoife would make a point to ask if any of them knew what room she was in, and, like, would just give a courtesy knock to be like, "Oh, it was nice meeting you. I hope you're all right," sort of, you know, check in.
Yeah, Auguste will be like, "Oh, actually, you know, she's not staying in the hotel. She has family in the city."
Ah, okay.
So, I don't know. Yeah, I know she, something, trade family or something, not one of, you know, the big ones, but yeah. And we offered her the room, of course. She just didn't really seem interested. I don't know, to each their own.
Hmm, okay. She'll log that information away.
All right, so the evening rolls on. Anything else you want to do before we switch to our date scene?
No, she just tries to get as much information out of the two of them to be like, you know, about what going to school there is like, and where do they hope to end up eventually and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, you do chat a lot. And honestly, it sounds like a dream come true, like going to the school and stuff. But Mary comes from a very, very wealthy family. But there are a lot of them, like the halfling merchant families that kind of rule Chaosiana. So she is, you know, one of like 12 kids in a family that. So she just decided she was going to do fashion and like make a name for herself because no one else in her family does fashion and they don't get it. But she doesn't give a fuck. And that's what it is. And then, you know, Corey, apparently comes from a long line of family members who have always been involved in couture fashion, whether supporting or organizing these events. And she's actually, Corey is a Ferellin. So she also comes from a great deal of money. The Ferellins are the family who rule Chaosiana. So she's, you know, a cousin of a cousin of a whatever, but she has the bloodline name. So they have a great deal of importance kind of put on them, and their need to succeed it seems like a big deal to them and their family. And they both seem to be about your age too, as well, like 16, 17. But yeah, the night rolls on and you get to know everybody a little bit better. And then that scene closes and we can move over to Lou in the carriage ride over to the university district. So the university, it's called the University of Phelan, but that name is a little bit misleading because basically the university is an entire like quarter of the city. It is huge. It includes like hundreds of buildings, things like art, like giant libraries. There are, of course, like buildings where that hold classes and lecture halls and tons of apartments for students and faculty to live and work and reside. So it really is like its own city inside the city, all kind of enclosed by these like big walls all around it. So when you get there, everything is just gorgeous stonework that all just looks so old and fancy, like very European old world that looks actually quite different than the rest of Phelan itself. So the minute you pass through the central like gates into the campus, it's all like a lot of rolling trees and hills and like manicured lawns, and it's really lovely as you're seeing all these buildings around you here. You feel like you're in a different world. And the carriage, you know, follows the directions to the address that were laid out here. And you pull up in front of a large, like, kind of brownstone building that seems to be just a gigantic apartment complex.
I step out and I tip the driver. Tipping everyone.
Another gold piece?
Yes.
You're very popular.
Cost of living is insane here.
Yeah. It's like the dwarven like cabbie kind of turns around to you, is like, "Are you sure? You meant to give me this? This is a gold piece. I'd take silver."
"Oh, fuck. Wait. So you guys are okay with silver here?" I thought
yeah.
Phelan, like, oh, Oh my god, I'm such an idiot.
I mean, I'll take the gold. I'll certainly take it, but no, it's like a silver would be.
You know what? Thank you for being honest. I appreciate the candor. Take the gold piece. It's the last one anyone's getting out of me.
Well, this is, I mean, do you want me to wait around? I guess for this kind of money, I could stare at the clock.
Yeah, I mean, go get a snack. I'll be a while, but if you just want to hang, that'd be nice. I'm not very good at getting cabs, so I wouldn't be mad about it.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll just park off on the side, and actually, I've heard that student pub down there is pretty great, so be there in case you need anything. Thanks, lady.
All right, yeah, I mean, sure, enjoy your night. I'll see you later.
All right. I'm Harold, by the way. Harold's cab.
Oh, yeah, it's on the side, so that would have been shocking if your name was not Harold. Yeah. All right, yeah. Well, see you later, man.
Yeah, have a good one.
Thank you. She's gonna like the Midwestern goodbye, where it's just like, yeah, back and forth. And
you're like, why are you leaving? Why are you leaving? And eventually, you know, he closes the door.
I'm turning around now.
Yeah. Okay. Goodbye. Yeah, and you see, you know, as you like kind of turn and close, you see a couple people who are like passing in and out of the building, and they look like, they look like college students for sure. The whole like tweed jacket, carrying books, like kind of messy, like glazed eyes looking at you through glasses, like as they pass, kind of like look you up and down in this like nice outfit, and they're like, and like shrug and move into their apartment.
I'll take a shrug. Not the first reaction I wanted to have to my new look, but I mean, it's not horror, so. Yeah, so she just kind of like walks up and tries to see the situation for you. And is it like a bell? Is it like a front desk? Or
yeah, so you can kind of walk into the front like area that you see here, and then it's immediately like a set of stairs that leads up and around, and there are all these different like number boxes with numbers on them that have little names on the front here, so and, like little keys that maybe these are mailboxes or something, and you can see Cassie's name's labeled on number 18. She seems to be the top.
She just looks up at the stairs with her basket. She's like,
oh yeah, there's no elevator here.
Guess I'm gonna work on this caboose that she seems to enjoy. Here we go.
Yep.
Make her way up those stairs.
All right, the city stairs. Nothing says big city like lots of stairs. Luckily, there aren't 18 floors to this building. It just seems to be on the top floor, which is only 3 floors. Number 18, which is on the end of the hallway. It's an apartment, like, you know, there's the carpeted floors, that's that kind of weird green color, and various noise coming from different apartments. You're hearing slice of life, like somebody's playing music or somebody's having an argument as you're, like, making your way down the hall here.
I think she probably feels very at home in that, given that her normal digs is just upper floors of a restaurant, hearing all that and all of her siblings, so... She's just like, it actually comforts her a little bit, and she like untenses a little bit until she finds the door, and then she just gives it a couple swift knocks.
Yeah, and you hear, yeah, who is it? From somewhere beyond the door.
It's Lou. Hi, surprise-ish.
Oh, one sec. From behind the door, and you hear like a something moving and clattering, and like somebody running around really quickly, maybe tidying, who knows. The door clicks and opens, and you see slightly frazzled Cassie there. She is wearing like very kind of loose fitting, like umber colored, not a jumpsuit. What's the classy word for jumpsuit? Where it's the one piece thing. What is that?
Romper catsuit.
Romper? Yeah, it's like a romper thing. Yeah, she's wearing a romper. It's cute. It's like orange. And she, you know, she opens up the door. She's like, hey, it you're here in my hallway. Great to see you. Here, come in.
Thank you. I kind of way love it here compared to like downtown. It's very stuffy.
Yeah, I really like the campus. It definitely feels more like its own kind of world, for sure. You look amazing.
I just, you know, I threw something on for the city, so it's not a big deal. This is what I actually normally wear when I'm not working. I'm lying. I got dressed up. I wanted to look nice. I'm really excited to see you. And she like reaches out and gives her like a small kiss on the lips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she, you know, she, yeah, puts her arms around you and kisses you back. And she's like, you're so freaking cute. Welcome, I guess, to my place. Sorry, I didn't have more time to clean. And she, you know, closes the door and kind of gives you, you know, she'll take your jacket or, you know, take your basket or something and like go off to put it down. And you can get a look at her place here. It seems like she's up on the top floor and her apartment is probably bigger than the rest you've seen because it seems to, it's a, quite long and takes up like a really good view actually down of the campus here. And you can see she's got a very like boho kind of style, like a lot of different eclectic furniture, like a thick, you know, plush like Persian rug here, like with this like green velvet couch, and everything is just books everywhere. There's like books on coffee tables, there's books crammed into bookshelves, there's books on top of tables, and lots of like strange things, from like weird weapons on the wall or like pieces of art. It's just the very maximalist, lots of stuff, a little bit crowded, but not too bad, seems to be her vibe. She like works over towards you know, her kitchen, where you see like there's a variety of like candles that have been set up in, you know, various colored glass jars, and she puts the basket down here. You brought food. You are an angel.
Wait, not just food. I have wine that I absolutely stole from that wedding because I could never afford this bottle.
Oh, it was so good. It was, yes.
Really, really good. I've never had a red that didn't bite back as much as that. And then I have, wait, okay, this is going to be like a great story for later, but garlic knots made from garlic from the wilds that I was gifted from a garlic princess? A lot, I know.
Okay, you're gonna absolutely have to tell me everything about that. Okay.
And then, okay, and then a small gift. Small, don't, like, it's not a big deal. I got you from a friend this book about changelings, because I know you were really interested in the wilds, and they're, like, really, it's, like, kind of heartbreaking, to be honest to you, but, like, extremely interesting, and they're some of the favorite people I've met in the wild. So I just thought maybe that'd be cool for you.
And she's looking at this and taking it all in, and is the like, doesn't know what to say. She's clearly so delighted. And then, you know, wraps you in a big hug, and she's like, thank you. It's so great to have you here.
I'm really excited to be here. I really wanted to see you sooner. But also, I would be 18 times more boring if I didn't have these stories. So it's been great, and I'm happy to be an adventurer right now. I just wanted to say, you know, last time we saw each other, we had so much fun. And before that, though, it was like really awkward, and you were like super nice and cool about it. Not what the gifts are for, but thank you for that. I was dealing with a lot, and I feel kind of bad because when we started our date, it was more like work, but I'm going to call it a date. I talked so much like I'm doing right now because I'm awkward, and I just wanted to be able to set up a comfortable evening to give you a chance to talk and me a chance to shut the fuck up and appreciate you.
Well, first off, I'm a big fan of everything you say, so no worries there. Yeah, I guess if you want to hang out here, we could totally do that. Or I don't know if you want to go somewhere more exciting. We've got some places on campus. You know, it is like a weekend, so students will be everywhere, but they're mostly cool. I've actually been super, super boring for the last couple weeks anyway, too, grading and stuff, so timing is perfect.
Well, whatever you're more comfortable with. This is your evening, so you tell me. I'll follow your lead.
All right. Well, then let's have a glass of this and see how it goes.
I can't even pronounce it. It's that fancy. Do you have a corkscrew?
She's like, Chateau Babouze.
Chateau the Boobs.
That's my best guess. Chateau Boobs. Excellent name. She goes and, you know, digs around in her, like, wooden, you know, drawers that seem to be incredibly mismatched, just stuff. She's like, okay, there it is. Finds a, you know, a cork opener and hands you a jar of wine.
Perfect. And Lou just finds herself like a seat on whatever surface isn't taken and sits down.
Yeah, there's like the big comfy green couch there. And there's actually a bunch of armchairs all kind of centered around like a heated stove area. So clearly lots of great reading chairs and spaces.
She'll sit down on the couch so that there's room for her to sit next to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she'll, you know, hop up on the other end of the couch there, you know, angled like towards you, lounging. She definitely seems very comfortable in her own space here. And she, yeah, sort of smiles at you and is like, well, I guess, what do you want to know?
I mean, we can start at whatever end of things you'd like to. Last we left off on talking about ourselves before things went to shit, you said ghosts of your past, but that seems a little bleak to begin on.
Yeah, okay, I guess, yeah, let's start with the basics. I, like, you know, I study the Fae. Basically, I work here, so they pay for the research.
You professor, or?
Yeah, I have to do enough classes just to basically cover the research costs, and then they pay for this. So, you know, and I do guest lectures and research and stuff. Sometimes I do, you know, work with grad students. And yeah, so basically this is home base. But I always, obviously, when I get a chance to go out there and actually, like, get into it, always happy to, you know, take those opportunities to get out of the, you know, the books and stuff. But no, it's great being here and, you know, being around students keeps me young.
Yeah, I mean, I've been told that we're still young, but I don't know. For me, no. How did you end up here? Like, what brought you to this profession? You've got, I mean, you said you were around my age for like 90 years.
Yeah. Well, my dad was kind of moved into Faelin pretty early. Sort of different than, I guess, a lot of the other, you know, elves, not so into that whole nature. So yeah, he met my mom in the city, and, you know, so I grew up actually in Faelin. So that seems like a natural kind of thing. And then, you know, whenever I would get to go and visit the elves, you know, my dad's folks, it was always really interesting how their magic worked and all the differences and stuff. And I guess I just kept asking questions about things forever, and that became a job. So I guess that's what I'm doing here. Nothing else really stuck. My mom is very fond of saying that books are the only thing that I have ever loved, apparently, which I think is a little harsh, but, you know.
Moms.
Moms. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, you've got a lot of weaponry for a professor. Where's that all from?
Oh, just like I said, you know, when I do get to travel or sometimes consult on things, I like to pick up something weird.
I love that your instinct is to pick up a fucking sword and not a snow globe.
Well, they look cool. I have some snow globes somewhere. Yes. I think they make me look badass.
I think you're right. I'm digging them. So, I mean, all right, you like weapons, you like books. What else? Is there something specific? What got you into the Fae? I know that seems to be like a big interest for you right now.
Well, I guess my mom, so she worked in the military for a long time, so she's been, you know, Empire her whole life, and obviously that's a huge deal. So I guess maybe some of that is also, I don't know, curiosity with it's so taboo, right? So many things about the Fae, and it's a really big part, I think, of our world that a lot of people just don't realize.
I feel like, I mean, from what I know about you, your interest for it is, like, a lot more positive than most of the people I met when I was working for the military as a cook.
Yeah. It, I guess, you know, though my mom is an Eldrin, and, you know, I grew up in the Empire and stuff, the Eldrin don't really make it easy to be different around here, and what's more different from them than the Fae? So I guess maybe I just felt kind of a kindred spirit there.
Is it something you never want to, like, move to that area, or at least for a time study there?
Live with the Fae? Oh god, no. I don't have a death wish. I mean, not that I'm saying you do. The fact that you live, that's incredible. I mean, you mentioned Coven, and I find that all fascinating. And I mean, if you said, hi, like, come and visit, I obviously would do that. And then I honestly, I just didn't even know it was possible for mortals to survive there. It's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, it really has been based on what you grow up hearing in the plains. I mean, for me, I guess it's just a little bit more of the same of adjusting to different lifestyles since I went from the underworld to the surface and then now visiting the plains and stuff. But I don't know. Everybody's has their own culture. Everybody's a little bit different. There's going to be assholes wherever you go. So it's been weird, to say the least. But I feel like everybody everywhere has some experience to contribute, and I've been really excited trying to work with the ingredients that I'm finding there to try to, I don't know, food always bridges things, so maybe.
It's just so fascinating to me. It's like when you talk about it, it's like you're just living in another place, but like it's almost like you don't even know how incredibly rare it is for somebody to have the experience you do. I mean, even the Corellans don't know a fraction of some of the things you have told me just in passing. It's incredible.
Did your studies take you to Ashtar to meet with the Corellans, or?
Oh, you can't, you know, work with the Fae for too long without running into the Corellans.
I'm surprised with, like, your amount of expertise they didn't, like, rope you in. Is it just because you didn't immediately want to kill every Fae you see?
Well, I guess they... and she... So this is actually what I was trying to tell you before, and then, you know, there was, like, a dead body.
Wait, hold on. And she, like, refills the wine glass. Proceed.
So I did go and maybe think about being a Corellan for a while, and I did train with them for some time, but ultimately decided it wasn't quite for me. So I never actually became a full Corellan.
What didn't fit for you? I feel like with your mom being military, like, it probably would have been pretty easy for you to take that role and help them where you can.
Yeah, she, that was, I guess, kind of my path for a long time, and then it suddenly wasn't. You mentioned it, but yeah, the way the Corellans are, they're just, and I don't know if it's their fault or just the times we're in, but definitely a hostile view of the Fae. Anything they don't understand is bad, and any information they get, they're not willing to share. And that was a fundamental difference that I just couldn't get around. The secrets they keep are...
So, I mean, when's the last time that you had any interaction with them? Was it a really bad parting? It seems like there's a lot of...
let's just say they're not super happy when people get a glimpse behind the curtain and get as far as I did and then walk away. People don't really walk away from the Corellans too easily.
Are you living, like, undercover? Is your name even really Cassie? What's,
No. Yeah, no, I mean, my name is Cassie, and let's just say I do a lot to just avoid notice. I think they've got bigger problems to deal with than me, which works for everyone.
I would like to insight check this conversation to see if I think that she still has any kind of connection with them. And I'm going to use the inspiration that I gave myself with breakfast.
Breakfast inspiration.
So 13.
You can tell it's really difficult for her to talk about, and you're not sure if that's because she's holding stuff back, or maybe you get the feeling that maybe she even can't tell you everything. But you get the feeling that she's telling you everything she maybe can.
Well, I mean, as far as dark secrets go, it seems like you didn't murder every lover you've ever had, so I think...
No, I'm not a criminal, actually.
Wow!
I'm a free woman.
You know what? Hold on, let me get my notebook out. I will check off my list of qualifications. Not a serial killer, so...
Not a serial killer. Good.
So
yeah,
far,
that's
you're
a good,
in.
Really? You didn't check that off previously? You're brave. Coming into my
Listen,
house.
Listen, you take chances whenever you start dating... I was scared to do it, but I did tell my friends, if I'm not back in this long, you know, I'm probably dead, so.
It's fair.
But, I mean, I think that it seems like walking away from that kind of expectation, both from them as a institution and your mom's expectations, is really, really brave. And I'm really happy you were able to tell me about that.
Yeah.
I think that it's that, you know, first step away from just listening to what everybody tells you about everybody else, that maybe seeing you do that, our society can start moving towards that and try to understand each other.
One hopes, though, with whatever's going on with the Krellins now. I don't know.
Yeah, my mom has a friend from Ashtar, and I heard that all of them kind of got corralled back, so I have no idea what's going on there, but sounds juicy. And she takes a sip of her wine.
Yeah. And she does too, and she looks, honestly, she just looks very haunted for a moment, and is like, nothing good.
Something that somebody who frequents the wild should be concerned about, do you think? Should I take a break from my back and forth, or?
I mean, maybe. It might be a good idea. I appreciate deeply that you trusted me so much and you told me and shared so much of your experience, but I think in the days to come, I think I would be a lot more careful who I tell that to. When the Corellans hear stories like yours, usually those storytellers go missing.
Yeah, I kind of met somebody early on in this venture that I have a feeling that could have been me. So he did not seem like a nice guy, but... I will keep that in mind, but to be honest with you, really, I only tell pretty women who I'm interested in about the inner workings of my life. I'm kind of like a container inside of a container with my thoughts and feelings. So, you know.
Oh yeah, so pretty women are a weakness for you, she'd say, and kind of scoots like a foot closer to you on the couch.
I would say on my list of things that can bring me to my knees, yeah, pretty women and a good croissant up there. I'm not sure which, though, but I have one here. So I will indulge, I think, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, I am definitely getting hungry. So, yeah.
Lou will kind of bridge the distance between them, mm-hmm. and kind of like take a strand of her hair and brush it away and put it back into her ponytail and reach forward with her face and give her a soft kiss. Well, do you want to... Oh my god. Do you also want to... I was doing so well, I'm making it weird again.
She's grabbing your face. She's just kissing you so hard. Doing couch stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's on it. So, tell me how the night goes. I mean, I believe it, Cassie, again, totally on board, and you are at some point, she'll like breathe out, she'll be like, you can stay the night if you want, you know, get all, like back into your face.
Yeah, I think that Lou stays the night. I don't think that it goes all the way at that point, but she's having a great time and is really excited to make breakfast for her in the morning with the, you know, yeah. that college fridge of like eggs and three mm-hmm. condiments and
yeah, you're like ketchup, eggs, and wilted lettuce.
All right, egg sandwiches on garlic knots.
All right, there we go. Yeah, so you have a fantastic night, and as you know, the evening rolls on. Aoife, after your soiree and things start kind of winding down, where do you go? What do you do?
Initially afterwards, has that heady buzz of being like, of being mead drunk, and will wander back up mm-hmm. to her room, and she'll take a hot bath and lay on the bed with, you know, with the towel on her head to dry her hair, and will lie down on the bed in the comfy robe, and will take that moment to just like soak in the fact that she cannot believe that she has landed this opportunity, and like everything for the first time in months feels like it's going the right direction. And then she'll take out her letter from her dad that she last received and read it over again. Sort of, and her mind just kind of wanders off thinking about like where they are, when, you know, wondering, being very excited and also a little bit nervous to see them again because it's been so long. It's been a few years.
Yeah, and you start to, you know, wander off and go to sleep. And I think probably it's like just when you've like fallen asleep that you hear something that kind of like startles you a little bit outside. It's like a heavy thud, like a punch, like at your front door, like something really heavy just like rammed into it, just that bang.
She lurches upright in bed. She takes a moment to listen to hear if it sounds again, or if she can hear footsteps right outside or anything. And she tiptoes over to the door. Is there like one of those keyhole or like viewers through the door to see outside?
Yeah.
She'll peek through.
As you're like looking, you don't see anything in the hallway, but you notice that the carpet where your feet are, it's wet. As if something has seeped, a liquid seeped into the carpet.
She panics for a moment, like remembering the mare again and the water, and she like immediately looks at the walls and she leaps backwards, and then she'll get down on the ground and like touch the carpet, be like, is it water? Is it blood? Is it clean water?
It's not blood, but it appears to be water, but it's sticky and has a smell to it. Salt water. Ocean water.
She definitely panics again, and she's looking around. She opens the door out into the hallway. Left and then right.
You can see, you know, the spot where the carpet is still wet is like clearly on the outside of the door, but it's just like sort of this puddle in front. And you can see something that has been shoved into the door. A dagger. Looks like a boning knife. That looks an awful lot like the ones that Lou carries.
She takes it out of the door and is studying it
It's in bad shape, like a dagger that hasn't been cared for, or there's rust on it. Like, it's been maybe something that's been, like, wet for a long time.
And she thinks about the mare again, and the information that she gave us. And she closes the door very slowly and quietly, and locks it, and then checks it. And just kind of in this frozen state of shock and a bit of panic, heads back over to the bed and sets the knife down, like, on top of Lou's bags. And just, like, sits at the edge of the bed very nervously for a long time.
And as you're, you know, feeling that, nothing else happens. The night goes on. And that's a good part to end part one of our episode. Ba-bam! So this episode, we're doing an extra long double feature. So we will be back next time with part two of this episode. So we're not doing a formal sign-off or send-off or anything. We will see us again. But let's just do a quick cast names, and we'll see you for the next one. So thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. I have been your Dungeon Master, Celeste Conowich.
Hello, my name is Katie, and I've been playing Luveri Sath, your drow rogue.
And I'm Sage, your suddenly panicking bard, Aoife Flannery.
You're having a bad night, babe!
Oh, hell! Someone's having a good night, someone's having a bad night. I don't know. Alright, well, thank you all so much for joining us, and we'll see you in part two in just a little bit.